Welcome to the Funding Moments Podcast.
Welcome to the Finding Moments Podcast, episode 21. We still keep coming back. About once a quarter is what we're doing now. You know what? We like to have fun, and we're so glad to have our audience and so glad everyone continues to download, subscribe, and tell their friends. And today we have Trish and Linnell, but we also have a special guest.
Yeah, this is one of my dear friends, Jody Diebold, and she and I met in a mother's group 15 years ago, maybe a little over 15 years ago. And she and I have just remained friends, and our paths have kind of intertwined professionally at some points. And we've just kept that friendship over time. But I thought she'd be a great guest because she has a lot of knowledge about, you know, all the things that we aspire to do, eating healthily, exercising, sleep, all the things that we say, you know, we know we should do, I guess. And she has a lot of tips and tricks about how to make that more practical and accessible. So that should be a good person to invite in just to chat.
Jody, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
We've talked a lot about self-care, and really sometimes we're like, how do you do it? Sometimes we're like, you have to do it, but you can actually tell us, how can we manage self-care today? Parenting, we started this during the pandemic, coming out of it. And Trish and I haven't been shy about coming out of a wildfire in Colorado and having to come out of that, which is a whole adventure in and of itself. And how do you find the time? Because everybody's got something going on. How do you find that time? Because if a parent is not right, then we can't expect our children to follow our lead in a proper way.
Well, I talk with a lot of my clients about how important it is to caretake the caretaker. You can't pour from an empty cup. And if you don't actually give yourself the same care that you're giving to your children, you're probably going to end up burned out, worn down, because there's only so much energy to go along. There's only so much time in the day. So the first thing I talk to people about is really looking for what moments that you could actually take for yourself. Be honest with yourself. Are there times during the day that you are doing things that are time wasters? I see a lot of people on their phones, on social media, getting dragged down that rabbit hole, or times when they feel like their self-care and winding down by watching TV, which is entertainment, but that may not be the best self-care to allow yourself to process through the thoughts for the day, allow yourself some true relaxation. One of the things I often see people do is after they shut off the laptop for work or get home from work or get home from the game, they'll turn on the television or pick up the phone and they put blue light in their face. They're putting screens in their face, which instead of having a more relaxing effect on your brain, it's having more of a stimulating effect on your brain. By the time people are ready to go to bed, those blue lights, what they're doing is stimulating your brain and making it harder for you to shut down rather than easier to shut down. So that's the place where I start, is looking for those periods of time, those areas of opportunities that you can take to self-care.
One of the reasons I selfishly love podcasts is because I'm not staring at a screen. So I can still get that interaction, that knowledge, that distraction, maybe a conversation out of my normal day, but I don't have that screen blue light. Is that correct as a direction?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the top things that I talk to people about, as far as let's find a more relaxing way to wind down. Maybe it's by putting on some soft music in the background. Maybe it's by picking up your book and reading. And the other thing I talk about is, how about sitting down and listen to a podcast at the end of the day? Because you're using your listening, but not putting a screen in front of you, putting the screen to the side and just taking in the information. It's so much more relaxing for your brain that way, and not so stimulating. Now, of course, I do put in there, the crime podcasts are probably not the podcasts that you want to listen to prior to bed.
That makes sense. Hey, Jody, I have a question about that. So I see in more and more places now, these blue light glasses. Does that actually make a difference in health, or is it still, you know, whether it's a phone or a TV show or a movie or whatever it might be, is it still not a great direction to go?
I think it's a good direction to go for the screens that you really can't avoid. So a lot of my clients that I work with are work from home clients, just like me. One of the reasons why I wear my glasses over wearing contacts is there are some basic blue light filters in my glasses. They're not like the ones you're talking about. But like if I were to buy those type of glasses, it would minimize some of the intensive blue light from me being at the computer for 8 hours a day. But if I've got somebody trying to use those blue light blockers just prior to bed because they still want to look at screens or not reduce their screen use at all in areas of opportunity that they can reduce it, I'm not sure. They're not miracle workers is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I had a feeling that was the case, but no, thanks. Appreciate it.
There's still a lot of research showing that there's not a consistent effect. So I don't know. It would be great because I certainly am in front of my computer all day long. And I get eye strain and things like that from being in front of it.
There's only so much that something can do to counteract that, because historically, this was not the case. Historically, we weren't in front of screens all the time like we are now. I mean, people were doing more interacting in person. Work was done more in person and less blue screen, less screen exposure. Now we're getting hours on hours of screen exposure, talking to people across screens. There's nothing that's going to counteract that level of what we're doing.
Yeah, and our kids are too, because there's so much of it used at school now. They're in front of the screens all day long. And I know like my daughter has a laptop that the school provides each kid a laptop. So she's on that screen in all of her classes.
The phone is such a great tool. Like, we wouldn't be able to track our 15-year-old if we didn't let him have it. As much as I love podcasts, the AirPods they use to just tune us out. So it's also kind of a way to block parents, not just blue light. But joking aside, when let's start when we wake up in the morning as parents, and we're all busy. So you're trying to get the kids ready. If you got a pet, the pet is very vocal and wants what they want. Everybody wants their thing. And you're also these days waking up, if you're working on, like we're on mountain time, if we're working on East Coast time, we're already buried in email before we start. And then that just kind of snowballs to the rest of the day. One of the things Tricia and I have tried to protect kind of in our routine is it's really difficult to control the end of the day, because that's when all the, it's like the airlines, it's when you back up and you try to deal with everything that happened. But we try to protect our dog walk. Our husky has to be walked every morning. It's not optional. She will go off the rails. And we've tried to really protect that, even if it's only 15 minutes or if it's 30 minutes, or sometimes we're like, okay, let's take another lap. That was one of the modes that we tried to like start off correctly. Any other suggestions, just kind of like how to start a day right, whether a cup of coffee, a sip of tea, like what are some tricks?
One of the things that I highly encourage, of course, this is going to get less as the year starts to come to a close. If you have the opportunity to get outside in the sunshine, at least for a little bit, but that early exposure to that bright light is definitely a good thing. That fresh air. So like if walking your husky was the first thing that you guys could do for the day, that would be amazing. I find that early exercise in the day, it's better than a cup of coffee. And it doesn't even have to be intensive exercise. It could just be 15 to 20 minute walk of walking outside, the fresh air, the sunshine, if it's there yet, and just the movement will wake you up better than anything else.
And then what about diet? Big breakfast, light breakfast? It depends on the person.
It depends on the person, I would say. It depends on the person. Some people like to do intermittent fasting. And a lot of times when they're doing that intermittent fasting, they're fasting until about noon. They break their fast and eat until about 8 p.m. The reason why that's the most popular way to do intermittent fasting is our evening time is our social time. Any sort of pattern that takes you off that regular social time really interferes with things. I find for a lot of people, having a breakfast could be bigger, could be smaller, whatever works the best with your body and your hunger level is the best. I usually like to include some protein at breakfast. The reason why is that protein kind of levels out the rest of the food. It keeps food in your stomach a little bit longer and takes a little bit longer to digest hold you over a little bit better. For those people who have insulin resistance or blood sugar issues or hypoglycemia, it keeps you from spiking high very quickly or falling low, just because it balances those blood sugars and just balances that energy level where you get kind of a steady burn rather than a quick energy burst or just running on empty.
I've liked some of the suggestions that you've actually given to me, and like little things with the protein, that taking what I normally eat for breakfast and adding the protein to it. It's like putting some walnuts in my oatmeal or doing something like that, where it's not like you have to completely change everything. You can do some little changes and things, small things that just kind of add, or it's not like a huge life shift that you have to make all at once.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I get a lot of people who really like to do oatmeal in the morning, partially because they're concerned about their cholesterol. And there's a lot of research that says the fiber, especially in oatmeal, is good for their cholesterol. So I talk a lot about overnight oats. I don't like them cold. So I won't eat them cold. But what I like about them is that you can prepare them a few days in advance and get them going, get them set up. I usually do oats. I add in some yogurt. Sometimes I add in some protein powder just because I really would like to get that hit of protein in the morning. It's optional. I also add in some milk as kind of that base. It can be cow's milk. It can be almond milk. It can even be oat milk, whatever kind you want. I add in seasonings and spices for those flavor. And I love to add chia seeds because chia seeds are going to add some protein. They're going to add some fiber to it, a little bit more crunch. You can add nuts, you can add fruit to it for some sweetness. You can even add a little bit of honey for sweetness just to kind of balance the flavors. There's lots of different recipes to do, and there's lots of different ways to do it so that maybe not every day your overnight oats are the exact same. You get a little bit of variety and you don't feel like you're eating the same thing day in, day out.
Our kids really like overnight oats. We tend to head that direction more in the summertime than we do when it's cold outside, just because it is kind of weird to eat oatmeal when it's cold oatmeal when it's cold. But no, I love the chia seeds idea. That thanks.
And I warm mine up. I make it, but I warm mine up just because I don't care for it cold. It's just not, it's not a texture that I care for because I'm so used to oatmeal being warm. But it does make my morning go a little bit quicker because I don't have to sit there and prepare everything or get a bunch of stuff out. I will take it out and I will throw it on the stove, warm it up for a little bit, throw it back, throw it into a bowl and eat it. And, you know, I've got breakfast in about 5 minutes.
I know that once I get into my days, I get my daughter dropped off and the day starts, like you just kind of like you were saying, Chad, you walk in, you feel like you're already behind. And then it feels like you can never have a moment. Sometimes even stopping to get lunch sometimes is complicated during the day. And what do you think seems to be, like, out of the people that you work with and talk to, what seems to be the most helpful solutions for people to start giving themselves just a little bit of downtime during their day?
I tell them to put it onto, like, if you work off an Outlook calendar or a Google calendar, is to schedule those breaks and make them immovable. I get the argument all the time. It's like, I'm behind. If I just work through this, I'll catch up a little bit more. I tend to point out to them, you could probably work for 24 hours straight and still not ever really truly feel that you're caught up. Truly, that 5 or 10 minutes with break that you go and just kind of walk around the house, maybe walk around the block, will actually be a rebound for your energy a little bit more. And you will come back so much more focused and ready to work. Does increase your productivity.
If you allow yourself to step and walk away, it's almost like it takes you a minute to catch, you know, where was I? But then it feels like things almost go faster. I guess you're just more present.
In my job, like, it's just very conference call, very people heavy. And now with Zoom, it used to be that you would take a phone call and you could talk for 60 minutes or you could get the conversation done in 5, depending on what it was. But now everything is scheduled in 30-minute increments. And now with the advent of shared calendars, everybody can see your calendar. So you just start getting meetings added on without even asking. And I don't know about other families, but Trish and I keep a shared calendar for the family because we couldn't possibly keep up without it. iCloud is a wonderful thing for that, but it doesn't share my work calendar necessarily. And we don't have the time to go add every little meeting that each of us have on there. So sometimes you forget to block it out. It's interesting. Blocking out time in the calendar is something that I've heard heard before. It's something I haven't been great about doing, but that's an interesting path to try to protect a few spots in the calendar.
I know with Outlook now, and I do this because that's what happens to me, is that I can't even process the meeting I just had and then get my mind ready and prepared for the next meeting I'm going into when people sandwich them. And again, nobody means to do it. It's just like, oh, an open spot. But there's a setting where it will always set your time off slightly. And that means that someone cannot make an appointment immediately after another appointment. And I just need like 15 minutes. I just need at least 15 minutes to like process what just happened, send a follow-up email, do whatever I need to do. And then mentally, like, hey, I'm going into this meeting. What am I talking about in this meeting? You know, and shift gears.
I love that idea. I'm in a unique position where my meetings are pretty consistent, but way less than most people. They're really long, and I don't have the ability to multitask whilst I'm in them, which is probably a good thing. But it can also create a backlog as soon as I'm finished. I finish with my client. I wrap up the couple of things that I have to do to finish the process. And then I look at my phone and I'm 20 things deep. And that's tough as well. But if I have to go straight to something else, that's no good. And then you can't ever catch up. And that's probably more of what you and Chad are dealing with, Linnell. But I love the 15-minute automatic break setting. I need to find that. Everybody needs to find that.
Yeah, I just feel like it's a lot easier because it used to be that I would get through it and then I would get to the supposed to be the end of my day and I have, oh my gosh, I didn't send this from the first meeting and I had to do this for this person. And then it's like, well, if I do all this now, that's another 2 hours worth of work. Where am I going to put that?
So Jody, you had mentioned that you're focusing on the health of the whole person and you're specializing in your specialties in corporations right now and focusing on health. And I know firsthand corporations are more focused on being family oriented, mental health, health and wellness. And you have to be, especially in today's workforce. But I guess I'm curious the effect on Zoom and Teams and FaceTime on human interactions and health, because one of the things that I'm noticing is depending how the meeting goes, not everybody's engaged, everybody's multitasking, but you're having to look at a camera the whole time. So one of the trends is people are just turning their cameras off because they don't want to have to stare at a screen and be show ready 100% of the time for their day. But I also noticed that the anxiety is up, the heartbeat is up. Is that the effect of the blue light? Is that the effect of always having to perform? What can we do with that? And what's your take?
I think that you hit the nail on the head with the happen to be on point all day long. Just the back-to-back meetings, the very little time to process what was going on in between, the building up of your ever lengthening to-do list, all of that increases anxiety, staring at a screen all day. There's even thought, one of the reasons why a lot of people do turn off their cameras is that it's kind of disconcerting to stare at yourself while you're on a meeting and see yourself and critique yourself while you're on that meeting. Even though you're not supposed to be looking at yourself, you're one of those little spots on the Zoom meeting. Nobody else is probably looking at you the same way you do. I find, because I'm on meetings back to back all day, I meet with clients individually one-to-one. I need to be taking notes while I'm there. And so what I do is I plop my Word document where I take notes on right over my face. So I'm not looking at me as much. I'm more engaged with the person. You know, I can glance back and forth between my notes and make better eye contact, watch for those context cues.
That's exactly what I do. Yep. Because I have to do notes the whole time. Yep. That works out really well.
That's funny. When I have Zoom meetings, I'm always screen sharing the whole time. And sometimes, and so I'm doing things live for my clients, and sometimes they don't have their cameras on. I always leave mine on, and I find myself like checking the camera every so often to make sure that I am maintaining eye contact, which is silly, but it's, you know, they're in opposite coast. And so, you know, I almost never get to see them in person. Oh, that's really interesting. I might have to try that.
That's it. I never thought about what you just said, though, because a lot of times if we're reviewing something, I'm screen sharing, or if I'm doing a presentation online, I'm screen sharing and I can't see the person. And I feel like that's so hard socially because, you know, you look at people and you can see clues like, oh, they want to say something and you pause, but I can't pick that up. And then I never thought about the eye contact thing. I wonder, like, I never thought about that. People might think I have really bad eye contact. I'm just staring at the.
It's weird because, for example, right now we're using Zoom to record this podcast, and the camera is not where your faces are. So I've gotten used to that over time, and to try and, like, you know, manipulate the balance of having to look at my own screen to do what I'm doing for my clients versus what. Yeah, it's complicated and it's weird.
But and further on that, this is the stuff that I think for some people leads to anxiety, being on the meeting nonstop or being prepared or not knowing. Sometimes you can't hear very well on those meetings. If you're in a conference room and you're remote, because there's a hybrid is a thing these days, so you might have four people remote and you might have a room full of people. I have to imagine it's just a horrible experience when you're on the remote side of that, because you cannot hear everything and you cannot get those idiosyncrasies, those little interactions. How do you kind of like just take that minute to breathe when you're what I call live ball in a meeting? Obviously, you can walk away, but what are some tricks you can do in real time?
Because so often my meetings are truly one-to-one, it does end up being a little bit more conversational. And if I just need a minute, I usually can take that little minute for myself to breathe a little bit, or because there is that little bit more interaction. When you're on a meeting with a bunch of people, it becomes a little bit more difficult. I don't really have a ton of tips and tricks for that.
You know what, though? Because I have that experience sometimes where I'm meeting with, maybe it's a school-based meeting or something, and I'm not there. I'm coming in remote, and it's a huge room full of people, and you can't hear everyone. It's very hard. I wonder if, is it okay, like, to just turn your video off for a moment and just close your eyes, take a deep breath, and
100%. Yes, to all that. Channeling back to my early career in theater days, one of the tricks that we would do, because we would have to do it on stage, it wasn't Zoom in a different time entirely. If you had a pair of actors that were struggling to get the interaction and you're repeating that scene in the practice over and over again, the director would throw an apple in their hand. So if you're eating while you're having the interaction, it triggers a different part of your brain to be a lot more casual and a lot more relaxed. So snacks, I would imagine, is a pretty good tool for the new way forward. Zoom etiquette, turn off your camera, but it's one of those ways you can maybe kind of pull yourself back in balance a little bit.
I use fidgets. I usually have something. Most of my clients cannot see my hands unless I bring them up. And I do talk with my hands a lot, but I use different fidgets. I've got a fidget on my ring, or I will hold on to something, and that fidget sort of sometimes grounds me while I'm talking.
So for health in general, what are some other tips for our parents? Speaking of apples, low-hanging fruit that could be done just to take a pause.
Oh, sleep. So, every parent needs sleep. We definitely need those tips.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things I tell most of my clients is, when you've got so much to do, sacrificing your sleep is, it's like shooting yourself in the foot. It does not help. So protecting that sleep the best you can, practicing your sleep hygiene, you know, dark room, cooler room, quiet, earplugs are great, eye masks are wonderful, routines. Routines are the best thing ever, because your body does like that routine. A routine bedtime, a routine wake up time. Sleep is probably the most important thing to protect.
So I have a question, especially in regards to routine. We find ourselves in our family very much struggling with that. Our school district does this thing every Wednesday where everybody comes in an hour later, just to monkey with what you thought you had arranged. So Wednesdays throw everything off, because if you start class at 8 o'clock normally, then you start at 9 o'clock. Ah, also our evenings are anything but routine. And we've really been struggling with, well, this kiddo is coming home at this time and this kiddo is coming home at that time. And somebody has to go pick up this person and all of those things compounded against each other. I would love to be able to quote unquote wind down starting at 9:30, but it just isn't feasible. How do you combat that?
I feel like that's really so relevant, especially at the beginning of the school year, because, and as kids get older, the more activities they're involved in. My daughter, sometimes her practice is right after school. Sometimes she has to be taken back at 5:30 and she doesn't get out till 8:30. And so my routine is messed up in terms of like getting dinner ready, getting everything done, like just the chores that you have to do every night. And then her routine is also so messed up that sometimes it's like, well, all you can do is your homework, like just focus on that. And so it feels so chaotic every day because of that.
I'm going to answer that by switching gears to one of my favorite topics, which is meal planning, because I find that is one of the things that if we get that into place, that also starts freeing up some time in different spots. Because part of the disconnect in the evening is we've got all these things to go to, and yet we still have to learn how to feed ourselves and get back and then wind down, because nobody can control how many things are in the evening. You can kind of get control about what time you're going to shut down everything for wind down. Kind of. Some things are outside of your control. But if we try to plan ahead, that's going to be the most helpful thing. And that's what I love about meal planning, because if you start with meal planning and have like a meal planning meeting every week with your family, what I encourage is it's not just one person doing the meal planning, that it is actually the whole family, including the kids, because that's what's going to drive the grocery list. Because that meal planning meeting, that's where it comes out as, this is the schedule for the week. Hey, mm-hmm. Wednesday, we're going to be going in a little bit later. So we've got a chunk of time there that's different. Thursday night, we've got band practice on Thursday night. It's going to go to this time. And with that meeting, the first thing you do is you hash out what's going on for the week, because you've got to know what meals are going to fit in what place. So sitting down for the meal planning, I usually talk to people that the first thing you want to do prior to even doing that, get a list of foods that you like and know how to prepare. And about once a month, add a new recipe or two to the mix. And then look at your weekly calendar. I advocate largely for having a whiteboard or someplace to write things down so that the family can kind of see it. It's a visual. And I use my Google Calendar all the time. But here's the thing, is I'm usually concentrating on the day. When we use the whiteboard on my kitchen, we're actually able to see what's coming up for the week ahead of time. And so using that as, this is how we're going to plan out what we're going to eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Look for ways we can kind of cook once, eat twice, get the family involved, because that makes it a little bit easier. One person doesn't have to do everything. And then you build your shopping list for that. And then I also advocate for having those backup meals, because sometimes, every once in a while, what you have planned out for the week, it just doesn't pan out that way.
I think that's really good advice. I know that we do meal planning and think about like, okay, well, this is going to be the day that she's back at the school at 5:30. She's literally going to have to eat dinner at 4:30. And so I try to have, like in those days, I try to do a meal the night before when we have more time that can be, I can set some, make enough that I set some of it back. And so even though I'm not going to be here at 4:30, I'll come and get her really at the last minute to get her to school. She has that food ready to go. And I know what it is. It's healthy food. It's not like she's going in there scrounging, eating a protein bar or something before she goes back for 3 hours. The other thing that is kind of nice is knowing, like, when we do have those longer days, to put the meals that she really enjoys that take longer to prepare on those days, and have, if she if we don't have, if we're not slammed with homework, have her be part of preparing the meal, because that's where we get a lot of our good conversations. And, you know, that's when they're not, don't feel like they're being interrogated. It's just kind of casual while you're doing something else. I feel like that has been good for us, but I feel like the chaos, like even they're just sometimes the best planning goes awry because something's got thrown into the wrench. But I do keep really simple staples. Like if we have a thing like that, I can throw together some spaghetti. Like I'm always going to have some backup, really quick go-tos that if we're in a pinch, we can do. I feel better doing that than I do like us having to do fast food, you know, stop-ins in between things. You're not really enjoying that high calorie meal anyway, because you're eating it in the car and get them to practice or whatever.
So tagging on to that and using the meal times to try to stabilize, totally agree. It's easier said than done. But I think personally, I subscribe to if we could get it right 90% of the time, then we're doing pretty good. The other thing that Trish and I've really tried to do is no headphones in the kitchen. Like just try to take and make that kind of a sacred space. We've been more successful with it at times. So we're probably at a 60-40, not a 90-10. Is there anything else? Like, is that causing more harm than good? Or is that a good rule of thumb to try to go to for health of everyone? I feel communication's important.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. Especially promoting that mindfulness and that presence, that there's times when you can wear your headphones and be on your own time, but those times are probably not best when you're around other people. It's promoting good manners. It's promoting communication. And plus, our best socialization is done around people IRL or in real life. I think quite often, and I think this is what's going on with our teens. I have a 15-year-old that she socializes quite often through a screen. And I don't think that socialization is as effective as the in real life socialization or communication. Nothing beats it. So having things that promote presence and mindfulness are great. You know, phones down, no headphones. We're together with real people. We need to be communicating with the real people.
I think that's a good point, because when you read what's out there about communication, 70% of it is nonverbal. It's, you know, your body language, your facial expressions that you don't have when you're communicating via device only. And I think that there's a lot of drama that can happen with the teens on those devices. And I wonder how much of it is they're not learning A, to read people, and B, they're just making assumptions because they can't read the people.
Sure. Good sense.
I did see something that was kind of cool, a family that calls out cell phone stack, and everybody stacks their cell phones when they need to have hey, I need you to listen to me moment. And I thought, oh, that's a cool idea.
Oh, we are so trying that today. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And it sounded so much better than like, I need you guys, you notice, I need everybody to listen to me now. And they're like, you know, all over the place. And they just yell, cell phone stuck. And everybody knows and stacks their cell phones. I was like, oh, that comes across so much better too.
That's, yes, agreed. Oh, that's fantastic. I really like that. I think trying to figure out a new schedule, it's still only October. The kids have only really been back in school for about 6-ish weeks. Everybody's got new activities, new teachers, new everything still. And so it's very much a try and figure it out kind of moment. But if you've got an anchor, like, okay, here's the theory of what we're going to eat this week and who's going to be home, and we're going to make sure we have these groceries. And then if it doesn't work, I try to do that. It doesn't always happen that way, to have something that can be frozen so that if things do go south, then it's not going to go bad and we're not going to, you know, waste the groceries and all of that. It's a lot. It's a lot to figure out.
It is. I think one of the things that we do that helps, I think it's just the first of the year is always hard, and it just takes a while to like figure out how you're going to do it. In our pantry door, the snacks are kept. I print out and put the schedule daily by what, you know, the jobs that have to get done for us to function. Things like, you know, laundry and feeding animals, those kind of things. And on Wednesdays, which are also really hard for us, it's a no chore day because it's just too much. We can't get in bed at like 10 or 10:30. So like something has to give. But then on the other days, I keep that in there. And then we have, you know, weekends where maybe, you know, we'll do that will be when like, I really need you to clean your room so that people can actually walk in there, you know, that kind of thing. But I think that that's how we kind of have to survive during the week is like, look at the week and what we have planned. And like, yes, I would like to do all that. But I also feel like having dinner together, that to me is a really important touch point. Like you said, an anchor, I think, for the family just to be together. And not only that, it gives your child a sense that like, you know, my parent is present with me too.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'd rather prioritize that to say, forget about chores on this day.
I like that.
And she's not going to forget it because she's guaranteed. I mean, there's no way she's going out there without a snack once she walks in the door. I know that. So,
so Jody, to kind of recap everything that we've gone through, correct me if I've missed something. But so, getting that first sunlight, good. Getting some exercise in the morning, even if it's a walk or it's your jog or whatever on your level, that's good. Breakfast. Up to the individual, what works, but you suggest a protein in some form, something more sustainable. For the workday, carve out moments, find moments for yourself in your workday that are protected and consistent as best you can. I'll throw in, try to do it 90% of the time because everybody that tries to be perfect will end up failing and stressing themselves out. Protect the meal times. Collectively said, trying to have a sacred space of communication is probably good, whatever that means for the family. It may be on the couch, it may be on the deck, it may be at the baseball game. Around food is usually pretty good. Sleep, don't shortcut sleep if at all possible. What else? What's the super secret Jody trick for a parent hack that we haven't talked about?
We've hinted around it and we jumped around it a little bit, but it is honestly giving yourself grace and giving yourself that ability to know that this does not have to go 100% perfect. I was sitting around at one of my jobs. This was my previous job. We were talking about all the balls that we had in the air. And then we just kind of built on it. We were all moms and we were building on it. And we had said, well, you know what? Really, it's not just all the balls that we have on the air trying to keep juggling. Some of the balls in the air are made of glass and some of them are made of plastic. And you got to make sure you catch those glass balls because those are very important. The plastic balls, it's okay to let those drop. You know, you dust them off, pick them back up, throw them back up whenever you're able to. And just deciding which ones are your glass balls and which ones are your plastic balls.
Oh, I love that analogy.
That is a good idea.
That's fantastic.
Well, Linnell, thank you for sharing your good friend. Jody, thank you for jumping in on this crazy hobby and passion project of ours. And for everyone listening, finding moments is about finding that grace, finding that moment. Don't take it for granted. But as we are trying to relay in our own experiences that we're sharing, take the time for yourself as a parent, wherever that is, and your kids will watch. They watch everything. Don't worry about it. But if they see you practicing it, that will be more meaningful than trying to just tell them to do it.
Well, thanks so much, everybody. Have a great one. Take it easy. And we'll see you next time.
Right. Thank you so much. Thank you.